There is no correlation between size of playlist and impact of that playlist on your speed. Placement in a playlist is also really important. The last thing you want to be doing is landing on a playlist that's got 50 tracks in it and being the 50th track. It's going to drive streams.
Alex Breeze.
Music entrepreneur, CEO and founder of Unheard Music.
Instead of your focus being on achieving 10,000 streams a week, why don't you switch your focus to making £10,000 this year from your music?
Imagine being able to pitch to playlists, check your fan base growth metrics, and run ad campaigns from the palm of your hand. This app can do it all. Tonight, I'm speaking with Alex Breeze, the founder and CEO of Unheard. We're talking all about playlists and the way in which artists can win by understanding which playlist to pitch to. So forget about Spotify editorials for a second. We're going to dive into the power of user-generated playlists, which can be a game-changer for an artist with the right sound and the right strategy. I hope you learn as much as I did from this insightful conversation and you feel more inspired than ever from Alex Breeze. A couple years ago, my dad sent me a WhatsApp with a link to an episode of Dragon's Den. And he's like, Yaz, there's a music marketer on the show. Have a watch. And I was honestly fascinated by the business model, fascinated by not only you bringing an artist to perform before your pitch, but also how data powered everything inside the Unheard platform. Can you give us a bit of insight into how that tech and really connecting all your socials and music streaming services into the data dashboard began your idea of Unheard in the first place?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, just to touch upon Dragon's Den is, I never wanted to go on Dragon's Den. I was always against it, but my fiance was saying you should just go on Dragon's Den. Like, it stood for awareness. You know, we'd already raised a bit of money, so it wasn't about the fundraise. So I started the process, and before you knew it, I was stood there in front of the four or five dragons, like pitching to them. And actually, it was a brilliant experience because it did raise our awareness. It was great for me. You know, I think personal development is key to your own founder journey. And certainly for me, it was that high-pressure environment where I felt like I learned a lot. And the kind of icing on the cake wasn't getting offers for their money. When I started on Unheard, it was about providing opportunity to artists, you know, and being able to bring an artist on BBC TV and allow them to perform was just the best thing about that for me. Wow. I was like, okay, if I've not done anything right in this journey so far, I've managed to get an artist on TV who was an independent artist. It was, you know, kind of in the infancy of their career. So that was the icing on the cake. But I think with regards to your question, you know, my background has always been in data and analytics. And I started doing this work in terms of being a trading analyst, so helping businesses use their data to make more effective marketing decisions back in 2018. I then pivoted, moving away from doing this for businesses, for the music industry. So I did this at Universal Music as a global analyst. And worked with artists like Rich the Kid and Katy Perry, helping create data-led marketing campaigns. But what I wanted to do, and what I really saw, and whilst I was working at Universal, is the buoyancy of the independent sector. Mm-hmm. You know, and there were so many talented artists in this independent sector who, quite frankly, and were being overlooked because they didn't have the marketing skills to amplify their great content. And I saw this as an opportunity. You know, I wanted to empower these artists who were creating amazing content. They were raw, they were dynamic, incredibly creative, resourceful, but just didn't have quite the tools to ensure that they were reaching their fans. This is what I wanted to change. So when I left Universal Music, I had the skill set and this idea around how you could use data to really reduce uncertainty. That's all data does, is it reduces uncertainty for independent artists. And we built a product, an MVP, after raising a little bit of capital, which essentially called amongst as many public APIs as we could from the streaming and social media platforms, gathering as much data as possible from Spotify, from YouTube, from Instagram. And then what we could do is we could process this data using our recommendation algorithms and create a list of tasks that the artist could then go through. And a really simple task, for example, have you got a Spotify bio? No? Take care, go and get yourself a Spotify bio, go and write one for yourself. Really simple stuff that we can then use to start to create or kind of format the launch pad for an artist's data-led release. And that was the basic principle behind the product. Let's ingest as much data as possible. Let's use algorithms to turn that data into something interesting and useful for an artist. And then let's allow them to carry out those actions in the product. You know, so for example, a data aggregation tool that connects all that data and presents artists with nice charts from Instagram from Spotify is cool. Like, that's great. But artists don't know what to do with that information.
Yep.
You know, and what I wanted to do is I didn't want them to have to leave the product to then take action. I wanted them to be able to stay in the product and take action. And so that's exactly what we do. If you're an artist and you're using our product and you want to run a TikTok ad using your data to build that audience, you can do that in a few clicks. If you want to pitch to playlists, and then you want to pitch to the right third-party playlists, those that match your track sonically, you can do that in the product. So it's kind of a long way of answering your question, but yeah, hopefully it's useful.
Absolutely. We're going to get into the playlist. That's the foundational thing I want to chat to you about the most. But I think two things you've done with the MVP as you grew it into the fully-fledged product, I think you've either done it knowingly or unknowingly, is one, you've stopped artists thinking about a single platform approach where they just do Instagram, and you've made them think holistically, yo, what am I doing on YouTube and TikTok and Twitter, even though it's dormant, Facebook pages, even though it's dormant. I love that you've done that. And also that you've made them think my music fan base is a lot bigger than I realize. When you connect all those dots together, it's not just X number of followers. It's followers plus likes, plus streams, plus subscribers, plus the whole package together is a lot bigger than you think. Was that part of the plan, or did you discover that as you went along?
The plan was always to be platform agnostic. You know, we never wanted to be tied to one platform, because exactly as you described, that isn't how it works in real life. Yeah. You know, an artist is on TikTok, posting on TikTok, then they flick into Snapchat, pushing out of Snapchat. You know, then they go into their streaming platforms, they're creating a marquee, you know, and for us, that's exactly the sort of action we wanted to facilitate, you know, and kind of the overarching thesis that I used to kind of talk about is, wouldn't it be amazing if an artist is walking down the road and they can take out their mobile phone, they can quickly run a social media ad, pitch to a playlist, pitch to a magazine, and kind of execute on the power of what potentially a major label marketing campaign would have, but in their pocket in 90 seconds, you know, and obviously that's a lofty ambition, but I do think that with technology going the way it is, with adoption of AI again coming to fruition, I think that lofty vision is achievable, and that's, you know, exactly what we're trying to do. So being platform agnostic is really, really important. And just to go one step further, what is amazing is when we get to speak to artists and say to them, instead of your focus being on achieving 10,000 streams in week one, example, why don't you switch your focus to making £10,000 this year from your music? Right. And then you see this like light bulb moment where artists are like, oh my god, I can actually get a bit more creative here, and I can come up with concepts where I'm going to build a WhatsApp community of 100 fans, and I'm going to feed them out like interesting bits of content, and I'm going to sell them merch and sell tickets, and ultimately you become an artist again. You know, but you become this creative being that isn't just thinking about week one streams and checking their Spotify for artists every day. You're thinking about how you can build a fan base and monetize that fan base. So that's a question I love to pose to artists. And often you see this like light bulb moment where it's like, oh, wow, I can't wait to be creative again. It's kind of cool.
I think for many artists, in my experience, is they're chasing to put the numbers on the board in the first place, and they do different strategies, tactics, and mechanisms to do that, rather than thinking, once it compounds, what's the output of that income generated, and what can I do with it to deepen the fan experience? And I sometimes think the climb up the mountain is so hard, they don't think, what will I do when I get there? Would you kind of agree with that sentiment?
Yeah, I do. I do. I totally get it. And I see the challenges that artists face, because as a music fan, you know, sometimes you are a sheep, right? If you see someone taking off, regardless of whether you listen to their music or not, you're going to go and check it out because everyone's talking about them, right? So you can't just focus on creating great quality music. You've also got to have that focus on building momentum and building a fan base at the same time. You know, Clive Davis said it's all about the music, stupid, back in the 80s, which I think is a like, interesting statement. I get it. But my kind of slight change to that statement would be, it has to start with the music. You know, it's got to be underpinned by quality content and music. Now that a days, that probably isn't quite enough. You know, what you also need is a great strategy. You've got to cut through 168 million other songs on the streaming platforms and the 50 million influencers and sports stars and artists that are on social media. So you need a bit more than just great music, but it has to start with great music. That has to be your initial focus. And then you go on that journey where you build momentum, and if your content's great, hopefully people come along with you on that journey.
I'm glad we're talking about this insanely powerful app, but how many of you knew that DistroKid have an amazing iPhone and Android app as well? There's so many features you can unlock inside, from checking your daily streams, cashing out your wallet into your bank in real time, updating your metadata, updating your lyrics, and so much more. And it's all done from the palm of your hand. You should get started by downloading from the App Store or the Google Play Store, signing in with your DistroKid logins, and you'll see everything that you can do from the laptop on the phone itself. If you're not part of the DistroKid family yet, you can get a 7% discount using my link and join our community. And that link is distrokid.com/VIP/allabouthhelping. Huge love, as always, to the DistroKid family for sponsoring the entire season 2 of this pod and empowering smart artists in their campaigns. I think this is totally in alignment with me, because I am of the belief that of all the different marketing levers there are out there, from paid social to influencers to radio to press to playlist pitching, my personal belief is that organic storytelling is the red thread between everything. Because if any of those curators or gatekeepers checks your socials, the first thing they're looking for, is there a story? Is there a buzz? And so I think, just to dive into one of those marketing levers to segue how I wanted to frame this chat, is Spotify playlists. I think there's such a misconception out there of, I'll go into my distributor, I'll go into Spotify for artists, I'll pitch for playlist, and I'll hit and hope that Spotify editorial might get granted. But you don't find out until release day, unless you work with a high impact platform and they can tell you you're going to be the face of this playlist on release. And so why is Unheard different in the way that you pitch to independent playlist curators rather than Spotify editorial curators? That's my question.
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, and we frame our third-party playlisting in a couple of ways, right? Third-party playlists can be really useful to drive streams initially. Now, they're not going to drive necessarily the same sort of numbers that you're going to get by an altar or a pollen or a fresh finds, but they're going to drive numbers to build that momentum. Mm-hmm. And what we want to do with that initial momentum, to be really honest with you, is you want to trigger the algorithms,
yes,
such that you then start to pick up algorithmic streams, and you're not reliant on third-party players anymore. You don't have to use our tool, for some extent. Yeah. But it's really useful to get the numbers going. I think that's the key thing for us. And we do a lot of work in making sure we're finding the right types of curators. So when we're onboarding a third-party playlist curator, now this could be Ministry of Sound, it could be Rising, it could be Stereo Fox, it could be Gymshark. They go through a series of quality checks and to make sure that those playlists are high quality and are going to drive streams. Some of those quality checks are really simple things, like looking for large fluctuations in the Spotify follower count of that playlist over a short space of time. Some are more detailed, where we actually speak to the curator and ask them about where they built that playlist. And then if they pass that test, we bring them into our network, and we're confident then to say that they will start to drive streams and trigger the algorithms for you. That's kind of the key way we're framing our third-party playlisting service at the moment. And I think that's different than other tools out there, because what we didn't want to have to, and this is that kind of the second part to that framing, what we didn't want to have is another tool where I'm an artist, I see a plethora of playlists that I could potentially pitch to, and I've got to go in and choose and analyze which are the best ones. I didn't want to have that. What I wanted to have is a system that would bring the playlist to you as an artist. So we have algorithms, again, which will understand kind of the sonic composition of songs in specific playlists. We'll then look at the sonic composition of your song, and we'll try and match you to the right types of playlists. And bearing in mind we've done the quality check, we should be in a good place to drive some streams for you. So this is the way our system works. And again, we want to do the heavy lifting for you. We don't want you to have to be a marketeer. Now, there are caveats to this, right? In that if your song isn't up to standard, to be really candid, up to standard being defined as not been mixed, not been mastered.
Yep.
I'm not talking about the creativity that someone has when it comes to songwriting or production, but really simple things. Has it been mixed? Has it been mastered? Does it sound good in the ears? Is it hurting the ears? If objectively, it's poor. It won't land on the playlist because these are real curators. These are the guys that care about the curation. So, you know, often artists, not often, about 30% of artists that pitch via the Unheard app, they're rejected. They get feedback, so they'll be told why they've been rejected, and they can then use that feedback to go away and work on some new content, on some new music. But that's the one caveat, I suppose, with our product, is that we can't guarantee plays, we can't guarantee streams, because frankly, we're doing it properly. But what we can do is we can take accountability for that. You know, if we've got 30% of artists that are trying to pitch to playlists having a poor experience in their eyes, then we need to do something about that. And so that's exactly what we've done. So what we've been building over the last 3 months is what we're calling an acoustic readiness model. So it's an AI model which objectively determines whether your track is ready to be promoted or not.
Wow.
By looking at things like, has it been mastered? Has it been mixed? And we can run a song through this model, and we can then objectively say to you, yep, it's a green light. Off you go, go and promote. You're very likely to land on the playlist. Or actually, red, don't waste your money on promotion. Instead, use one of our partners. So we partner with the likes of Master Channel, Derek Arley's company, Engineers. And you can then go and get your track engineered or mixed, mastered properly before you start to spend money on promotion. You know,
very nice.
We don't want to be encouraging artists to promote their music when they're not ready. And unfortunately, I think this is a big challenge that those tools serving independent artists face. You know, a lot of independent artists aren't ready to promote their music. And that's okay, but someone needs to tell them that, who works in the industry and understands what's going to work and what isn't, and allow them to invest in the right areas at the right times.
Do you know what? I think as the product, Unheard already does so much of the heavy lifting for you, because when you pick which song you want to pitch to playlist for, they give you the impact score, the popularity score, and they're dictating which ones we think have a high probability of you getting pitched. And if that's a percentage, I believe, that you have it marked as. And I think artists who take the lazy approach and just think, what's the biggest one? I'll pay for a pitch. No wonder they could be disappointed with their rejection and some honest feedback and criticism, not criticism, but feedback of why they didn't get that successful placement. I think it all comes down to actually putting the effort in. And I know you've talked about doing this on the go, but perhaps it is something that needs to be done in a calculated way with somewhat of a spreadsheet or a tactical way of marking. I'm going after 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 playlists and playing per pitch. So this is the total amount I'm going to spend. How do you kind of help artists kind of devise their plan? I guess I should say, which ones they're going after off the recommended playlist.
It's a great question. You know, and just to touch on a point you made there, is there is no correlation between size of playlist and impact of that playlist on your streams.
Great.
You know, like you said, there are some huge playlists which are very dormant, and there are some small playlists which are very, very active and engaged, you know. And I think the way we help artists to make the right decision is we order the playlist in size of, order of impact. So not size of playlist, but impact that is likely to have in your streams. We also have, like you said, the probability score, so the likelihood or propensity of you landing on that playlist, which filters into the way we recommend in that playlist. So we do a little bit of work in the back end to make sure we're serving you the right playlist. But what we also try and do is, one of the recommendations on the app away from playlisting is around downloading a marketing calendar and a marketing plan. Now, this is absolutely key. You know, in fact, the two most valuable services on the app that I think are most valuable, that no one uses, so please, if you're listening, go and use it because it's free, is download a marketing planner, go and download that, and you can book a call with a marketing expert. It's free. You get a 15-minute call with me or one of the team. Right? And I think that's the most valuable service, because if you come to us and say, my budget is 50 quid or my budget is 200 quid, we will show you how you should best spend that. And then we'll pop that into your marketing calendar. You can take that away, schedule your releases around your budget, and away you go. You've got that strategy that has been taken from, I'm not the most experienced person in the music industry or Unheard in the music industry. You know, we hired a guy called Paul Truman, who's our first adult that we've hired. You know, we're kind of, that's what we kind of call him. And he came from AOL, where he joined when it was a tiny startup and left as the general manager, VP of international marketing, worked for Little Sims, Jerry Cinnamon, Mumford & Sons. And, you know, you have the opportunity to get on a call with someone like that for 15 minutes, an independent artist. You just can't get that anywhere else. You know? So I think the strategy, even away from playlisting, is the place to start, which will then inform, you know, how you should be doing your playlisting.
I think that's key, man, because, like, you know, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail, right? Benjamin Franklin. Now, I really believe that sometimes artists have created this stigma, I believe, in society where they just are convinced that there's no point pitching to user-generated playlists because they charge for submissions. And I think that really does need to be broken. Yes, there are some bad types out there. And yes, there are bot-filled playlists, no doubt. Don't go to them. But there are this really core group of curators who just care about discovery of new music. And if you were in a, I don't know, country new country music playlist, and you've made a country song that is from a small up-and-coming artist, and if you're placed somewhere in the middle of that playlist, I think you can genuinely grow. I always use the metaphor of like the sandwich. If you have a song before you and a song after you, if your song in the middle doesn't sound different to the other two, it's a good fit. And if it sounds like it sticks out for mixing, for mastering, for sound direction, it's not a good fit to that playlist. What are your thoughts on that? People pitching, paying to get in playlists, and the health and authenticity of a playlist curator, do you think?
So, like, there are some great authentic curators out there, like you said. I think of people like Nasco at Stereo Fox, amazing guy, like, it's literally an encyclopedia of independent music. And Sharp at Rising, you know, like, there are some great people out there creating awesome playlists, and those are the people you want to reach, and those are the people we look for our product. But I think the one of the bigger challenges that maybe the narrative faces, you know, the narrative around playlist pitching, is that it should be 90% of an artist's focus. You know, and artists, because it's been such a whirlwind over the last 4, 5, 6 years about how impactful playlists are, you must land on New Music Friday, and you must land on, you know, Nike playlist, Pollen, whatever it might be. Artists think that if I pitch the playlist, that's my answer, you know, and that's all I should do. And if I get on a playlist that is botted and I get 100,000 streams, who cares? I've got 100,000 streams. Well, like, actually, you know, and Spotify have now changed the way they rank, so they're punishing for this, which is great. But actually, an artist's focus should be 10, 15% of their strategy should be playlisting, you know, not 80, 90%. Uh-huh. And then 10, 15% should be on the preparatory phase beforehand. You know, does my content sound great? And does it look great? 10 to 15% should be on that marketing strategy, 10 to 15% on organic socials, 10 to 15% on and building your fan community, 100 super fans. You know, and I think that is the biggest shift in mindset that artists need to start to have is, yes, playlisting is important, but it should be 10 to 15% of my focus. And just to touch on your point around placement, you know, placement in a playlist is also really important. Mm-hmm. You know, the last thing you want to be doing is landing on a playlist that's got 50 tracks in it and being the 50th track. That isn't going to drive streams. You know, you want to be closer to the top of the playlist. And it goes back to the Clive Davis thing. That if your music is great and if it sounds great, you're probably going to be placing it at the top of that playlist because it's a great track. Mm-hmm. Something that helps there as well with playlist placement is the relationship out of those directors. So again, we spend a lot of time, our head of promo, James, spends a lot of time with these curators, making sure we foster healthy relationships such that when people receive a submission from an unheard artist, they think it's going to be decent and they're going to place it higher in their playlist. That's the thing we really try and work on.
Yeah, I think that's really important, actually, so that it's a message of trust and authority that when they receive a submission from unheard, it's not just spam, for lack of a better word, is a genuine, we think this is the actual vibe of the playlist you curate, and we've chosen this artist specifically for you. I think that's very, very important, so that it maintains the integrity of their playlist, as well as your relationship, as well as your reputation.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, we built a playlist curator marketplace. So playlist curators log into this marketplace, they receive submissions through this marketplace. They can easily review their songs, you know, using a slider across various components, and they can also need free text. So it's, and basically we built that almost with playlist curators, you know, because we wanted to build something that was useful for them, that they would find easy to use, easy to log into, easy to leave feedback. Because again, we want to foster those relationships to say, in the same way that we're building our artist tool for artists, we're building our playlist tool for curators. So it's really, really important.
So then when does an artist need to think that pay-per-pitch model is maybe not too junior for me, but maybe I'm evolving to a stage where I want a team built around me? When is the right time to go to Unheard and say, can I use your in-house human team to actually pitch me to the right people and I entrust you with a larger budget and you make the best decisions and you customize the pitches instead of me writing a ChatGPT little one that I did on the side? When is that right time in your eyes?
Yeah, great points. Whilst you mentioned ChatGPT, we've actually just built a layer on top of GPT-4 called unheardmusic.ai. And so you can go to, this is a spoiler alert exclusive. I'll give you a couple of exclusive maps. Unheardmusic.ai, and you can go and write a Spotify for Artists pitch or a press release or even create a marketing plan just by answering a few prompts and a few questions. So that is available. We launched that on Friday. We launched it publicly, but we haven't talked about it just because we're trying to get a little bit of feedback. Then we'll plug it into our product properly and monetize it. But for those listening, before it goes into the product, it's free and it's online on music.ai. Another spoiler is we have three tiers within our subscription, which again, we're launching in 2 weeks. Essentials, which is a free tier, and that caters to artists just starting out, right? You're releasing your first ever track. You want a bit of support, advice, maybe a few ads, a few playlist pitches. The Essentials tier is perfect for you. Then we have the Pro tier, where you subscribe to our product. And that unlocks things like you do get a touch point with us. You get that 15-minute marketing call. You get some one-to-one advice. But you also get deeper services. And you get really tailored recommendations. You get really tailored ads and playlists. You get discounted playlists. You get free ads, that sort of thing. So a really nice and deep service. And that would cater to artists who, you know, are going from that 1,000, 2,000 monthly listeners up to the 10, 15, 20, 30,000 monthly listener mark. Fairly broad spectrum. Then we have the Select tier, which is for our team to lean into your campaign properly. And we're really selective here. We have a few artists that we've worked with, and I can name some, like Mr. Easy, for example, but awesome guy, awesome music, awesome content. We work with Mr. Easy on those sorts of levels. We work with Frankie Wah on those levels. They work with Fraser T. Smith and his Future Utopia project on those sorts of levels. So we want to be really selective there. And to be honest with you, I wouldn't say there's a number you need to hit in terms of followers or listeners to get into that tier. It is, how serious are you? Like, how serious is your appetite? And how good is your music and content? You know, if we come to you and we say, we really love what you're doing, because this is sometimes how we work on the select tier, is we go and find artists. We say, we love what you're doing. Regardless of the numbers, your music is amazing. We think we can do some damage here with our marketing expertise. And that's how it works. And that's how we want to work with you. So I'd say for artists who, you know, have some traction, and they have some good proof points, but aren't quite there yet and want to really take this seriously, that's when you're ready to come to us. And we'll know within minutes. Like, we'll have a listen to your music if you submit it to us, and we'll know really quickly. We'll go, yeah, this woman or this guy's ready. Let's get them in. Or we'll provide you with feedback and we'll say, not quite now, but sounds great. You know, like, we'll keep an eye on it. So I wouldn't want to put a number on it, because I think that does an artist creativity injustice. But I do think that if you're there musically and content wise, we would certainly be interested in working with you.
I think that's exactly what I was hoping for. Like, it's not about a number, it's about the hunger. Because I really do believe that you can have an artist who's on the small number of social media subscribers, small number of streams, but has the hunger and has the musical talent and ability to go far. And conversely, I'm afraid you can have the artists who are the total opposite. They're massive and they have a huge number of plays, but it's the music was created with a large team of people that almost did it for them. And that musician just showed up, recorded, and didn't do any of the other hard work. There was a team behind them and an engine behind them that did everything. And the art is lacking, for some lack of a better word.
100%. And, you know, names that spring to mind, like Emma Rubin, who was on Dragon's Den with us. What an amazing artist. Like, so, so creative, so, so talented. Doesn't have the numbers yet, but I'm sure she will in time. We absolutely wanted to work with her. You know, Biawi is another one who we had at our event at The Great Estate last week. Amazing artist. Actually, she has quite a lot of traction now. You know, Sam and Emma, who were this amazing duo. I went and gave a talk in Manchester at a music college there. And these two guys reached out to me afterwards, sent me some music, and I loved it. I thought it was amazing. You know, they had no traction whatsoever, but we invited them to come and perform at the Great Escape Tour, and they were great. You know, so I think, again, it is all about the music, and like that will dictate and determine whether we want to work with you more closely.
You know, I heard this analogy where you know that you're in your ikigai and your true purpose when the Venn diagrams of your life all align. And from what I'm seeing of you, you have this wonderful ability to want to help artists. You have this incredible insight into data and decision-making. And you have also not only this business acumen, but also the strategic side to you. And there's a whole other heap of different elements. And I can just feel that you're just in your ikigai right now, man. Like you're just right in that sweet spot where you just got to continue the process, doing what you're doing, and you're going to be unstoppable. I feel that.
That's so kind. I'm actually blushing. If you could see now, like, you know, I am blushing because actually I think I'm just very lucky. I'm very fortunate. You know, I've got amazing people around me, like whether that's investors, supporters, friends who, you know, are on this journey with me and are really guiding me properly. I think, and also I'm still very, you know, gratitude is a thing that you've got to carry with you when you're on this journey because it's really lonely. There are lots of highs, lots of lows. You sacrifice a lot. There's no balance in your life whatsoever, you know, to be really honest. But I love it. You know, I feel like I'm very fortunate to be in this position where, you know, Willard Horowitz is one of our investors, who's the chairman of Cobalt, founder of Haywall, sold it to Sony. And, you know, I get to speak to him. Like, that's just amazing. I get to learn from him. Then with Hazel Savage, you know, she was sold her company Musio to SoundCloud. She's an advisor and an investor. Matt Spetzler from Francisco Partners, you know, all these amazing people that are kind of guiding this journey. I feel very lucky. I'm certainly not the smartest guy, and hopefully this is inspiration is probably too strong a word, but for those people that maybe aren't great at school or you know, never been the smartest, like, that's me. You know, I've never been the smartest guy, but what I am, and I'm passionate about this, and I'm committed to it, and I'm hardworking. I'm very fortunate.
Dude, I think that's the perfect place to leave it. Thank you ever so much for coming on the pod. I appreciate you greatly. Closing remarks, where can an artist sign up for Unheard? Where can they get started with their first campaign? And yeah, what would be your like one last closing piece of advice for them to get started and get going quickly?
Yeah. So I would say I'll do something interesting. You can have my email address. So send me an email, alex@unheard.com. And we'll come back to you. If you want to sign up to the product, visit our website, www.unheard.com, spelled U-N-H-U-R-D. There you can sign up to the pod to find out more information. If you're on your iPhone, you can also download on the App Store. Just search for Unheard and you'll find us there too. The piece of advice I give is like, do it and test. So what I mean by that is if you're thinking about posting a piece of content, post it and then learn from it. Has it resonated with your audience? If it hasn't, that's cool. Post a different type of content. See if that resonates with the audience. Same with music. Put it out. Does it resonate? If not, it's the best you've done and you want to pivot slightly, great, pivot. Yeah, like it's the same with building a business and a product. Do it, test it, iterate. Do it, test it, iterate. So that's what I'd say to artists as well.
That's phenomenal, bro. I fully agree. Yeah, the test and learn mindset, it doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to be one step closer. And that's that mindset for as many years as it takes to get there for real.
100%. Someone once said to me is, if you've released the product and you're proud of it, it's too late. You know, so like get your products out early and then test them and iterate and then become proud of it over time.
You're a legend, man. Thank you ever so much. I appreciate you big time.
Thanks, man.